What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed Heidi Powell, the co-host of ABC's TV show Extreme Weight Loss, as well as the co-author of Extreme Transformation, Lifelong Weight Loss in 21 Days. This is a really heavy one. We go into eating disorders and vulnerability and some really heavy topics. But if you've ever struggled with anything or you want to make some big transformation of any sort, I really think you're going to find a lot of value in this one. Check it out. Before you do that, I would love if you would go leave me a review on iTunes. You can do that by going to brutestrengthtraining.com/podcast/reviews. Enjoy the show. Hey, Heidi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. I'm glad we could finally connect.
I know. Sorry about the craziness.
Absolutely. No problem. So I know you and Chris have 50 different projects, and we could spend the entire time, you know, just talking about those. Why don't you tell us what you worked on today?
What we worked on today. Well, today was kind of different than most days because I'm actually preparing for this. I'm doing this performance, Mike. I am dying. Like, I haven't done gymnastics, dance, or cheer in like 17 years. Mm-hmm. And I got asked to guest perform this weekend at FitCon. And so I had to like pull all of my tricks out of the bag. And I've been working like 3 hours a day on this performance. It's crazy. So I worked on that a lot.
This sounds like a talent show type of deal. What do you mean performance?
Okay. So do you know that I've been doing bikini competitions, right, and Chris does physique, right? Well, so in the bodybuilding world, there's like, for women, you can either do physique.
Oh, that's right.
Figure. I do bikini, which you kind of walk on stage and, you know, show off your glutes and your shoulders and whatever. And then there's this other category that's fitness.
Well, yep.
I've never done it, but actually one of the owners of Pro Physiques that I work out at is like number two in the world in fitness. And she's doing this guest performance at FitCon this weekend at the IFBB Pro Show. And she's like, Heidi, you've got to do it with me, because she knows I have like, you know, a few tricks here and there. Mm-hmm. And so I like am going against all of my fears and doing it with her.
That is so cool.
Terrifying. Terrifying.
So cool. I actually, now that you're saying it, me and Jake trained a girl named Samantha Leach. She works for bodybuilding.com, and she was training for the fitness competition that you have to do, like a plyometric push-up. Yes. What else?
Well, so I don't know, like in the fitness world, I don't know what the requirements are, but like in our routine, it's like there's a one arm push-up, there's all these different like push-up jumps, mm-hmm. like there's a bunch of flips that girls do, I'm doing, and back handsprings. So you kind of, it's like your opportunity to show off your different strengths and balance, coordination. Like all of my CrossFit training is totally coming into
that
this,
because so I'm doing badass. A bunch of different
handstands. And then you got to like throw in dance, which honestly, I'm not like the best dancer in the whole world. So we'll see how it goes.
But it's so cool. You're about to do it in front of hundreds or thousands of people.
Yes. Yes. I'm like taking a note from Chris's book and facing my fears. I'm like, if he can do the ECC championships yep. with all of the top people in the world, I can get on stage and do this with Whitney.
That is fucking cool.
Thank you.
Good for you.
Thank you.
So I have a really hard time with kind of easing into conversations sometimes, but Chris and I just dove right into it, and it was received really well. So I'll just kind of go right into it. So, you know, I know you suffered with an eating disorder for a number of years and have recovered from it and have helped a lot of women and men, I'm sure, deal with their own. What does eating disorder mean to you, and are there different forms?
You know, I think first of all, before we go too far, you had mentioned that it's something that I've recovered from, like ED, past tense.
Right, right.
I don't think that an eating disorder is ever something you fully recover from. I think an eating disorder is just like a drug addiction. And if you've ever, you know, heard or been to any rehabilitation, will let you know that you're always a recovering addict, mm-hmm. like present tense. I'm always a recovering I'm always recovering from my eating disorder, I should say. I'm like in recovery. I'm doing amazing. It's something I've had, like I've been on top of for years mm-hmm. now, but I always know at the flip of a switch, it's something that's so easy to go back to. So I have to kind of stay on top of my game. But for me, yeah, I exhibited all the signs of an eating disorder. I starved myself, and like the starvation went kind of extended beyond that, went to the restrict binge. And the binges, because I was so concerned about how I looked and how I appeared to other people, turned into purging. And I think a lot of that just came from pressure of being in a really healthy family, a really fit family. And then also, I was a cheerleader. I was a gymnast. I had all these things going on in my life where perception was everything in my world. But that being said, I think the biggest part of an eating disorder is the mental aspect of it, the body dysmorphia that kind of, I think it comes along with every eating disorder that people struggle with, you know? Mm-hmm. I would look in the mirror and I didn't see 90 pounds, 89 pounds, however skinny I was. I only saw my flaws. And I think that's something to this day I have to stay on top of, because it's so easy for us as humans to only recognize and only focus what's not right with us. Mm-hmm. We have a really hard time being like, oh, okay, my shoulder caps are looking good. My glutes are looking nice. Or for Chris, it's hard for him to look in the mirror and see all the progress that he's made. It's easier for us to kind of notice what progress we haven't made or what areas aren't as good as we want. And that's something where when I was younger, especially going through those, that 10 years of dealing with an eating disorder, that it plagued me. It was all I obsessed about, all I thought about, and really drove me into, hands down, the darkest period of my life. And it wasn't just a year. It wasn't 2 years. It was most of my adult life, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you and Chris are in the top 0.001% in terms of body composition in general. And yet you guys still, you know, go through these moments of self-doubt or whatever it may be. So where, how do I word this? You know, so basically that tells me no matter how fit, no matter how good you look, you're always going to have those types of
thoughts,
kind of negative self-talk, or yes, or you know, potentially have that kind of talk. So how did you start to think differently? How did you start to communicate differently with yourself and with others to support you? What was that process like for you?
You know what? Well, I will say what you just touched on, and like, in all honesty, I know I'm just going to backtrack a little and then I'll get into your question. That's something that you're right. Like, to this day, we still have moments. Like, I know, for example, I less than a year ago was only 103 pounds. I did lots of CrossFit, lots of gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Wasn't totally happy with my body. I was happy enough. But I always wanted like a bigger lower half. I always wanted more muscle. And as I've started to put it on, I'm now at the point where I always wanted to be. I'm like 120 pounds. I've put on a decent amount of muscle. I feel good. But like, as embarrassing and crazy as this sounds, there are days I'll look in the mirror and I'm like, have I even made any progress? Like, I that self-doubt, that negative self-talk continually creeps in and is something that, without a shadow of a doubt, we have to push out or it will take us down. Like, we are not immune to it, just like anybody else in this world. Mm-hmm. And how I turned it around for myself, you know, it was such a process for me. Although like my behaviors, my eating disorder behaviors had totally started to turn around when I met Chris, which was only 7 years ago. The mental side of it was still really tough. Like Chris and I, do you know that we met at a self-improvement seminar?
I think he did tell me that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I have to say that seminar right there was life-changing for both of us.
Because was it the Landmark Forum?
It was Landmark.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah, and it actually dove into how we are so concerned and we're so focused on ourselves and our like what's not right in our bodies and with ourselves and who we are, that we don't really take the time to focus on anything else in life, all of those great moments, and kind of dove into a lot of other things that we use, you know, in transformation of other people as well. But that hands down was the time where I started realizing, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I am not living my life with integrity. I'm not living my life the way that I want my kids to live my life. I knew without a shadow of a doubt all of those things were directly related to how I viewed myself, how I viewed my body. And that was probably the moment when Chris and I met. And believe it or not, we started putting our effort towards helping other people together. And I saw how all of those years of my eating disorder, like the shame that I felt because of it, I actually, for the first time in my life, was able to use my experiences and all of my negative choices, my crappy choices that I made, and help other people work through their issues. Hands down, that was the time that I started to view myself differently. I didn't view myself as this piece of crap that made all these shitty decisions in my life. Right. And had to deal with all of these consequences of an eating disorder, from honestly, like rotting, not rotting, but the acid erosion on your teeth, like what it did to my body, all of these things. I thought, I will never ever be okay with the damage that I've done to my body. I can't undo what I've done. Like, there's never going to be any, I used to think there was never a part of what I had been through that would ever be helpful to anybody else. But when I started actually talking about it and sharing my experiences with Rachel from season one that was going through something similar, or, you know, Jackie from season two who had similar experiences, Alyssa in season three, it's like every single season, almost every participant could identify with what I had been through. And to be able to use those experiences, those shitty choices that I made, to actually transform and help somebody else, hands down, that's when I almost appreciated the cycle, like the really the cycle that we kind of go through in life. I appreciated those decisions that I had made. I appreciated my struggles more than ever before. And I started to view myself as something better than what I had told myself I was before.
You started to have some compassion for yourself.
Yes. Yeah. That's like the hardest thing to do. It's so easy for me to have compassion for anybody. Like, it's easy for me to look at this person and say, hey, they've made this mistake. I love them unconditionally. But it's so hard for me to look at myself and to forgive myself for the choices I've made. And I think that's probably human nature.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. And I'm not sure if you and I have talked about it or Chris has talked about it, but I, you know, when I was 17, I was sent off to drug rehab. So I, you know, I spent the better part of 6-7 years in AA meetings. And I totally agree. Once I started working with young alcoholics and drug addicts, it totally flipped for me. You know, I was doing well, in all senses of the word, but it really started to click for me when I could teach those principles that I had learned to others. You know, I started to view myself just like I was looking at them. So that's very, very powerful.
Yeah, you start to look at AA and you're like, wow, I mean, they've been going on for this long and they've been successful for so long for a reason. Like, that whole sponsor, isn't it what it's called? Like, you're a sponsor in AA?
Exactly.
I don't know if Chris ever told you, but my dad, he passed away 5 years ago. But before that, he actually struggled with a really bad addiction that landed him in rehab. And he actually overdosed at one point. He did, I think it was a 30-day rehab, the inpatient rehab that he did. And then AA was a part of his life for the remaining 3 years, and he ended up dying of an enlarged heart. Yeah, which was crazy, but it was like he had 3 years to clean up his life. But throughout that process, I became very familiar with AA. Like, every time we'd go visit them in California, it was like every single night we'd go to an AA meeting with them. And I think one of the biggest changes in my life that you kind of reminded me when you talked about it, was when we went through family week with my dad. And we got to learn. I was actually there for him, But it was funny. I was there for him, but I learned more about myself and my addiction, my food addiction, my, you know, body dysmorphia addiction. I learned more about myself than I even did what he was going through, because addiction's addiction, no matter what it is. If it's food, if it's work, if it's sex, if it's drugs, it's, you know, it takes a hold of us and can tear us down no matter what, no matter what you're dealing with.
Right. But it's just different behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like you also realize as you're going through it, and as I saw my dad going through it, when you pull one addiction away from somebody, it doesn't just go away. You almost have to fill it with something else. Mm-hmm. Same with me and my eating disorder. I found myself appreciating busyness in other areas of my life. And that's probably why I'm kind of a workaholic and a workoutaholic. Mm-hmm. Because it's like that's my healthy addiction. Both of those, they're healthy addictions in my family. Whereas I know without a shadow of a doubt, if I take those things away, I am going to go right back to focusing on food and restricting and, you know, it just that vicious restrict binge purge cycle that I was in before. I know I'm not immune to it. And that trickles over into the people that we work with. We know from day one, it's like, hey, you're a food addict. And we have to point that out to them. And we say, it's not going to go away just because we give you a diet and we give you an exercise plan that you're going to follow for a year because you want to do well for the cameras. Guess what? When we leave, that addictive behavior is still there. Like, we've got to find a healthy addiction for you to plug in so you're not going back to those old behavioral patterns once we leave.
Right. So what are some of those things? Actually, before we even go there, if someone is listening to this that, you know, thinks they might have an issue, what is the most important piece of advice that you have for them?
You know, I think the one thing I wish I would have heard back in the day, I would have wanted someone around me to tell me that what I'm going through is not abnormal. And so anyone listening that has an issue, nothing's wrong with you because of it. I felt so flawed, and I have decided if my daughters ever go through it, which chances are one or both of them probably will, I want them to know that what they're going through is normal and it's something that can be worked through, and there's light at the end of the tunnel and there's hope. Hands down, having that hope that everything can and will be okay at some point would have been huge to me, because it just, and Mike, you've been there. Like, I'm sure there were points in your addiction, you know, that time period of your life where you thought, I'll never get out of this. Like, absolutely. I won't. Always. I can't even like imagine crawling out of this hole and like not having a dark cloud over me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so knowing, like, if you would have known back then that you could be as happy and successful and really just free from those chains, gosh, I mean, hope is the biggest thing. I want people to know that there is hope, that it can be done. Mm-hmm.
I love that answer. It's really funny, you know, if someone has cancer, everyone feels, you know, compassionate for that person. And, you know, people with cancer don't feel like guilty. They don't feel like they are a burden to,
like, they're
to
responsible people like that, for right? It.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Responsible for it. And what we know about addiction, you know, the most popular theory is that addiction is not a choice, right? People are not choosing to binge. And it may, you know, it may start out that way, but when something becomes an addiction, it's not a choice. So in essence, it's just like any form of serious illness, right? Yes. So you should not feel guilty or bad about yourself. You can overcome it. It's a very normal, a normal occurrence, very, you know, fixable. You know, millions have overcome it.
Very fixable. And I think you kind of hit on something too that struck a chord. It's a lot more common than you think. And I remember just feeling like I was alone, like I was the only person that dealt with any of it. And I felt like if I really tell someone the truth and let them know how much I can eat at once and throw up or whatever it is, they're going to think I'm just the most disgusting human being alive. But the truth is, everyone has their own demons and their own secrets and their own skeletons in the closet that they're not letting out. It's we tend to look at our own issues and think that they're the worst in the world, but mm-hmm. everyone's dealing with something. And I think knowing that allows me and helps me to have more compassion for anyone going through any struggle and realizing that addiction isn't a choice. It's not. Yeah. I mean, it's a choice whether we, you know, continue to kind of put that food in our mouth and make those decisions, or we kind of choose to ask for help. We choose help. But like the patterns and the behaviors and those are all things that we, just like cancer, just like any disease, we do need treatment for.
Exactly. If a coach or a friend suspects that a friend or a client, is struggling with an eating disorder, what is the most appropriate way to approach and support that person, in your opinion?
Yeah. Well, without a shadow of a doubt, anytime anyone on the show dealt with something, or I suspected that they dealt with something, the first thing I did was talk to them. Like, 'cause there's nothing worse than kind of betraying somebody's trust and going around them and talking to someone else about their issue in hopes of them getting help. I always, always, always talk to that person first. So if you're a coach out there and you suspect that someone that you're working with has an issue, or a friend of yours has an issue, be direct with them. There's a really good chance that, you know, the person struggling isn't going to be forthright, isn't going to want to tell all of their issues right up front. But I think the more direct you can be with your friend or your client, and let them know where your concern's coming from, that you care about them, you love them. It's not something that you're accusing them. It's you never want to be like, hey, you have an issue and you need help for it. Mm-hmm. As someone that's been on that side before, as soon as someone comes to me and tells me something's wrong, I want nothing more than to lie to that person and tell them that everything's okay and go somewhere where I feel safe. So I think as long as you can create a safe environment for that person, let them know that you love them and you are here to support them unconditionally, no matter what. But hey, I have a feeling you might be struggling with something. And if you are, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm only telling you this because I love you and I want you to get help. So that's number one, I think, is talk to them directly. But I also think as a trainer or as a coach, you have to know that dealing with an addiction, whether it's food or whatever, is out of your scope of practice. There's not one single person that we work with that didn't have access to a professional therapist. Because, yeah, Chris and I can be there to coach them along the way, and we can share our experiences and we can tell them how we would deal with certain things. But a trained therapist, a professional therapist, is going to be the only person that can really, really deal with those kind of issues inside of their scope of practice. Otherwise, it's like Chris and I are kind of doing things. We just shouldn't, you shouldn't be the one saying you're going to treat somebody for their addiction. You should always direct them to the proper forms, the proper channels of help.
Right. And sometimes just... letting them know you support them, you care about them, and helping them to find those resources can be an enormous, enormous piece of support.
For sure. And I think something too, people can only get help when they're ready for help. Sometimes we want help for people, for a friend, more than they want help for themselves. And as frustrating as that can be, because you know your friend, say Sally, has an issue. If Sally's not ready to make the choice, if she's not ready to make a change, the unfortunate truth is she's not going to change, no matter what you do to force her into some kind of rehab. It's got to be something that they want for themselves. I think unconditional love and support, like we're talking about, is one of the best ways to help them see that they need to change. But you can never force anyone to make a change if they're not ready.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so I want to move on a little bit. You and Chris, like I started out saying, you have some huge projects, and you've been really, really successful in every one of them so far. How do you personally deal with stress? What is the process for dealing with stress? And so I need to connect those two. You know, you have so much going on that it makes sense to me that you would encounter a lot of stress all the time, right? You have these enormous projects with tons of people involved, and stress is just one of those things that accompanies that kind of thing. What's your process for dealing with that?
Well, I am probably the most, I feel like I am a stress case, like a 24/7 stress case, because there is so much going on. And while I think everything you've seen, like everything people see, has been successful, I'd say for every one thing that we have that's a success, there truly are about 10 things that are complete flops or failures. It's just that those are the things that no one ever sees. Those are, you know, the things that kind of get swept under the rug and I guess lessons learned from, and we move on. But as far as stress goes, honestly, I am not the best at dealing with my stress. I'm not as great as I should be at taking time out to rest and really do anything that kind of turns my mind off. I'm at all, because I think in my mind, I'm like, okay, if I have a minute to breathe, I should breathe while I'm paying my bills, or I should and Ruby needs me. I mean, having kids alone, four kids, is like a 24/7 job, and we have help for sure, but we have help around the house, and someone's got to guide and manage and direct all the help and direct the people coming in and out of our house. So it's like, there's, I'm not the best at dealing with stress.
So how do you prevent burning out in that case?
You know, that's actually something, believe it or not, I'm dealing with right now. Like, it's, if there's one struggle in my life right now, there's a lot, but I'd say the hands down, the biggest one is I'm realizing that 7 years of going balls to the wall, and I don't have balls, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I do.
Metaphoric balls. You definitely have those.
And maybe sometimes in the relationship, Chris would say I have the balls, but I'm realizing I'm not invincible, and I'm not like this superhuman person that can go, 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 go. I think Chris and I both have kind of been burning the candle at both ends for the past 7 years as we've built the show and built the platform. And we keep thinking to ourselves, we're like, gosh, as soon as we get this show going, we're going to have time to relax. And then when we got the show going, it's like, oh my gosh, okay, the show's here. There's all these opportunities we have to make the most of. As soon as we make the most of it, we're going to have time to relax. But with every opportunity you take, you fail to realize that you're increasing your workload by 10 times. Every single time you're like, okay, as soon as I get here, it's like, Chris and I both have these days where we're like, oh my gosh, I don't even know if we're going to be able to get anything done today, because we're just, there are days we feel just burnt out and fried. So one thing we've actually been trying to do much more often than we've ever done before, and we haven't done it because we just feel guilt for some reason, just taking 90 minutes every other week and getting a massage. And it sounds so simple, but even something like that is something that's been so hard for me and Chris to do. Because like we work together, we parent together, we do all these things together. So if Chris and I have time alone, you better believe we're not turning off our phones and we're not like, you know, turning off our minds. We're like, okay, how can we build this app better? What are we going to do about John? What are we going to do? Like we eat, sleep, and breathe this lifestyle. So to be able to kind of just turn off, get a massage, and like drift away, whether we stay awake or we fall asleep, has been huge to us. But other than that, Mike, like we kind of suck at dealing with stress.
Hey, that is absolutely fair. And it's good to hear that such successful people deal with these issues just like everyone else, you know?
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
Like, I think Chris really loves when like people come into town. When you're here, he loves it because he can kind of like turn off for a little bit and just like chill with you or work out. Like workout's definitely a stress reliever, but then because it's our job, it's like hard to kind of separate it from work sometimes, you know?
So. Yeah, and it's interesting that you say the massage thing. You know, when what I've always learned about meditation is the same kind of thing. You know, you're basically, you're just sitting there thinking about nothing, or as these thoughts arise, you let them pass and all of that. It's hands down the biggest mental reset that I've ever found, you know, and really? I've tried lots of different techniques and stuff. That's just kind of my thing. I like to play around with that kind of stuff. And that's the same, you know, what you're talking about, that massage, that's the same kind of thing that I get from meditation.
See, one of these days you're going to have to like talk me through how you do it, because even the thought of you like describing meditation gives me anxiety, because I'm like, wait. I have to turn my brain off for 5 minutes and not think about a thought, because I'm like, I'm thinking that's like a wait, what if a thought pops in my head? I'm going to need to write it on my to-do list. But then your to-do list just becomes so effing long that nothing even gets done. Mm-hmm. You're just, you know,
it's funny. What you're saying is super common, and you're the most prime candidate for meditation of all time. I'll actually attach a link to this podcast, and I'll send you one directly to a how-to on meditation, a really good one by Sam Harris.
That'd be great.
Yeah, really, 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 really simple stuff.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on.
I bet you didn't expect this to turn into like coaching Heidi session. You're like,
no, I love this. I love this so much.
Here's how you stress.
Oh, that's perfect. When you want to learn a new habit, how do you go about that? Is it just like automatic? You say, I want to start doing something, and it just becomes a habit, or do you have a certain method to learning a habit?
You know, there's been a lot of research behind it. I don't know if you and Chris talked about this, but there really has been a lot of research behind it takes 21 days to build a habit. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that? Mm-hmm. And that was actually, believe it or not, that was the reason. We had kind of read a bunch of those studies, and that was the reason why we decided in our last book to make it 21 days. It was a 21-day program. And it was funny because as we were writing the book, all these other, like halfway through, all these other studies are coming out that it's like, it's not 21 days to form a habit. And I'm like, well, shoot, because I think everyone has their own idea. Mm-hmm. But I really do feel like habits are not easy. Habits are easy to create, but they're incredibly hard to break. And I do think that's at least bad habits. So you have to be careful when you're creating a bad habit, because they will come quickly. But then as far as like retraining ourselves and pulling those bad habits away and creating good habits, hands down, the most important part of creating a good habit is accountability. Accountability is something that so many of us want to escape. And we don't want to tell, like, if I'm trying to create a good habit, sometimes it's like hard for me to let Chris know that I want to create a good habit, because I don't want him to hold me accountable. I want to kind of have that flexibility and that freedom. But that accountability factor, having someone in your life that cares enough to make sure you're staying on your game, is absolutely crucial. You've got to surround yourself with people that know your vision, that know what you're trying to accomplish, and can hold you to it whenever you need it most. Mm-hmm.
And do you ever, I've thought about this one a lot. You know, like your friends are the most important, are arguably the most important part about for you, like continuing a habit. Do you ever promote like ditching certain friends?
Absolutely. And it's so hard to say it, because I'm like one of those people that thinks everybody's worthy of having a friend. So like for me to tell somebody that they need to kind of cut Joey out of their life, it's a little bit tough. But then at the same time, your well-being is more important than anything. And if you can't be the best you, you're never going to be a good friend or a good example for Joey, who's a bad example to you. So yes, without a shadow of a doubt. And when those negative influencers are family, it makes it even tougher. Doesn't mean you have to cut them out of your life forever. Like if it's your brother or your sister, don't cut them out of your life forever. But while you're trying to form these good habits, just try and put yourself in situations that aren't going to involve those negative people. Because if you do, more than likely you're going to be pulled back into those ways. It's hard to be that. It's hard to actually think, bottom line, if you think you're going to be that person in a crowd that's strong, that's not drinking, that's not doing these things when everybody else is, you're totally wrong. Mm-hmm. It's only a matter of time before you're doing those same things again.
Right.
So surround yourself with people that are already practicing those habits that you want to practice.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I want to talk about social media for a second. So there are so many women that seem to make posts, say on Instagram, that are looking to get attention for looking sexy rather than, you know, rather than leveraging it to build a brand or a business. They just want that external validation for looking good. Yeah. How do you think about your social media? I noticed like your message most of the time is family and love. And then you sprinkle in pictures where you're in a bikini or, you know, working out. How do you decide what to post? How do you decide what to post?
Yeah. You know, it is actually hard sometimes, not to fall into that trap. Like what you just said, and you said, women posting pictures to get that double tap or those likes by showing off their body. I've worked hard for my body. I've worked hard for what I have. And there's a side of me, just like there's a side of everybody else, that wants acceptance and love from whoever we come across, you know? So it is tough sometimes to be like, okay, like let's not cheapen who I am and my brand by posting pictures that just show my body. And if I ever do post a body shot, because it's not bad to, and I'm not saying anyone that posts absolutely those pictures not are bad at all. But for me and who I am and what I represent and the people that are watching me, like my family, I do have to be really careful because I set an example for my daughters. If I do post a picture that shows my body, I will typically only do it if there's, number one, a lesson to be taught, or number two, I'm showing some kind of a progress thing, and which that I have a really tough time with some of the heat that I get for showing progress pictures. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? Like I worked my ass off to build my ass, I guess. And so if I want to show a picture, I'm not like trying to be sexy and show my butt and just be like, hey, look how amazing my butt looks at all. Cause I'm not saying it looks amazing, but I think there's something so cool, like so incredible about the human body that literally in like a matter of 8 months, you can build, you can mold your body to whatever you want it to be. So for me, it's like, I will post those pictures. I'm not going to post them to try to seduce men and like, you know, have some crazy following that just wants to follow sexy butt pictures at all. I always want to stay true to who I am. And I always want to stay true to my brand. But then I also have to remember, like, my brand is what I want it to be. It doesn't have to be this whole. In fact, I just got into a conversation with a girl yesterday that brought up that butt picture. Do you know which one I'm referring to?
I'm not sure exactly.
I'll have to show it to you. I posted a before and after of my butt because I had a really small chicken butt before. And I did, and my legs were the pigs. And then like it was within, I think it was like 7 months or something, where I actually built glutes. Like I spent a lot of time, and I would say half of the comments on my post were just like hateful. They were mean. And it gets brought up quite often. I'll meet people or they'll kind of come up to me. They'll be like, I could not believe the comments on your butt post. And it's hard sometimes not to be affected by social media and affected by what people say. But then at the same time, I have to remember, you know what? You're never going to please everybody. So create the posts, write the things that inspire and make you want to be a better person. And then the people that should be following you will follow you. And the people that shouldn't, you know what? Let them go away. They don't need to be following you. Mm-hmm. And the things that inspire me are my family. They're the things that you see. They're my family. They're exercise. It's healthy cooking. It's my own, like my personal progress that I've kind of had myself. Like the journeys that I'm on, that's what inspires me to be a better person.
Right.
So that's what I'm going to post about, whether people like it or not.
What do you think? How do you think over time this affects like women that only post that kind of stuff? And again, for that external validation, yeah. What do you think this does to their self-esteem over time?
Well, I think when you post those pictures and you do get the validation, you get that immediate gratification that you want and that you need, not need, but that gratification that you want.
That you feel you need.
Yeah. Yeah. It that starts to mold your priorities, I think, at least those girls. Like I think it's really easy for girls to kind of start to place value on things that aren't as important. And you'll notice that like, they'll really go to the extremes to kind of get the attention that they think makes them feel good. And when we're, anytime we're reaching for attention and gratification and acceptance over social media, there's such an emptiness in who we are as a person. Like you'll never feel good about yourself. And I think I'm guilty of it like anyone else. Those moments, those times where I care too much about who's liking my pictures or, you know, how many likes something's getting, I'm not happy. And so it's something where I kind of have to back off too every now and then. So as far as the girls that are posting those pictures, with so much value placed on how pretty you are or how great your body is, I hate to say it, but the truth is everybody ages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that beautiful 20, 30, even 40-year-old woman, at some point, your looks are going to kind of go the other direction. It's just the circle of life. And if you haven't built value in yourself outside of your looks, you're going to have a really hard time finding happiness in life, mm-hmm, in general.
That is,
if you haven't really built on your other strengths, you mm-hmm know?
And that doesn't just go for, you know, men and women posting that kind of stuff on social media, but any kind of behavior that you're just, you know, you're using repeatedly to get external validation without having, you know, a strong sense of self and yeah, self-worth, outside of those things is definitely destructive over time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something with my kids, I worry about. I'm like, I try to be really careful how much we praise how cute they are, how pretty. Mm-hmm. Like these girls, they still need to hear it. Like I am 34 years old and I need to hear Chris tell me that I'm beautiful. But mm-hmm at the same time, I also think we need to be teaching our kids and our friends and whoever, anyone around us, telling them how worthy they are. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, like what hard workers they are. And really, I think placing importance on the things that do matter and the things that will be there, whether prettiness or our bodies are taken away from us, parts of our bodies, you never know what's going to happen. And you don't want to be in a position where you lose anything in your life and you're left feeling hopeless and helpless and just not worthy.
Right.
Because worthiness comes from who you are on the inside, not what you look like on the outside.
Right. And we all already have that inside of us, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Every single person. I think it's so easy all we really have to compare with everybody else is kind of what we all look like on the outside. But really, that's why I love connection. I love getting to know people. I love working one-on-one with the people that we work with, because you really get to see the value that every single person has. And I might be going out on a limb here, but I have to say the people that we work with that are 200, 300, 400 pounds overweight, sometimes I'm like, these are like the diamonds in the rough. Like these are the people that have so much worth and so much value, and no one ever gives them the time of day. Like because of how they look, mm-hmm, no one even gives them a second thought or a second look. And people are just missing out on everything that they have to offer because they don't look a way that society feels like they should look. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally tangenting, but that's how Chris and I find our best friends.
Right.
Throughout the process. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like we're really good friends with the crew members. We love, you know, the people that we work with on the show and work with in life. But really our best friends are the people that we work on, like the people that we get to transform the lives of, because mm-hmm they are just such incredible human beings. And they have so much, they've never really seen value or had worth on their outward appearance. Mm-hmm. So they've been forced for their entire life to find that value within, mm-hmm. what little value that they feel. They have incredible senses of humor. They're mm-hmm. incredibly compassionate. Like they're these people that I'm like, oh my gosh, you make me want to be a better version of myself because you were just so incredible.
Right. I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Thank you.
So that leads me in to my next question. I want to talk about the book a little bit, and it's called 21 Days to...
It is. Well, the very first, it's Extreme Transformation, mm-hmm. Lifelong Success in 21 Days.
Okay.
Lifelong Weight Loss. My bad. That's okay. And we never really talk about the subtitle.
Yeah. There's a chapter in there called Find Your What and Your Why. Why is it important? Why is it important in transformation to have a why, and how is that different than the what? Okay, so yeah, maybe start out by defining the two.
Yeah, of course. So your what is pretty simple. Like people come to us and they usually have their what. Like they usually come to us and they're like, I want to lose half my body weight. Or for, you know, another person, it might be, I want to get on stage and compete in this event. Or I want to be able to deadlift 400 pounds. Whatever the heck your what is, that's your what. The what's like, what do you want to accomplish? I want to lose 5 pounds. I want to lose the baby weight. Your why, and your what's really important because you need to know what you're actually striving for. But most people stop there. I think most people only know what they want. They don't really stop to think why they want it. And the why is hands down, without a shadow of a doubt, the driving force behind any change, any transformation, any habit formation. I mean, if you set out to reduce, you know, take sugar out of your diet for a full year, chances are you're not going to be able to do it if you don't know why you're doing it in the first place. Like, it sounds like a great goal. It's cool. But if there's really no reason why, 20 days in, 30 days in, you're going to be like, you know what? I don't know why I'm doing this in the first place. Eating sugar is so much better. Blah, 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 blah. You're going to come up with all these reasons why you should continue with those destructive habits that you had before. Same with transformation. When somebody comes to us and they want to lose half their body weight, if they don't know why, if they don't have that deep reason why, they're never going to accomplish it. Mm-hmm. Like if their why is just, because I want to stand on the scale or get in a, you know, bikini, get in a bikini and look good, that's fine. That's kind of a pretty surfacey why. That's, you know, they at least know why they want it. But as we work with people, as we kind of peel back the layers of the onion, we start to see why they really want something. And their why, usually it comes from within. Why? It's usually because we don't feel good about ourselves the way that we are. We feel that shame. We don't feel worthy. And I might even say that everyone's why, kind of at the core, goes down to we all want love. We all need love in our lives. Mm-hmm. And so that why, if you don't take the time to identify that, chances of you actually sticking to your goal is slim to none. Even if you reach your goal, chances of you maintaining that goal, you can just kiss it goodbye. It's not going to happen.
How does one go about, you know, quote unquote, finding their why?
You know, well, I think it's actually an easier process than most people think. And like I kind of made mention of a surfacey why, it's okay to find a surfacey why at first. Anytime you set a goal, and that you obviously know your what, ask yourself why. But why do I want to attain this goal? So for someone that might have gained 15 extra pounds with their baby that they just can't get off, and it's been 5 years, that woman's goal might be, I want to lose 15 pounds. Well, that's her what, and that's awesome. But why? Why do you want to lose 15 pounds? Start asking yourself all these questions. Say, maybe it's to look better for my husband. Maybe it's because I want to get in a bikini again. Maybe it's because I just want to feel good about myself. And as you kind of start to ask yourself these questions, and there's actually the chapter in the book will kind of guide you through this too. You could actually get deeper and deeper and deeper. So yeah, you want to look good for your husband, but why do you want to look good for your husband? And then you're like, well, I want to look good for my husband because if I look good for my husband, he's going to love me more. And you start to see that, like, it's about that person wanting to be loved. Mm-hmm. Or I know a lot of our people will come to us and they want to lose the weight. And we ask them why, and they say, because I want to find my special someone. Well, it's not just because they want to find their special someone, but it's because they want to be wholeheartedly good enough and accepted by someone for the rest of their life. They want to feel complete. And so many times we kind of turn to other people for that love. So I highly recommend, if your why has anything to do with somebody else, that's awesome. Keep it, because you need some driving force for now, but always try and circle around and find your why from within you. Like, why do you, what are you lacking from yourself? What can be accomplished to fill you by reaching this goal?
Mm-hmm. That's a great answer. You have another chapter that talks about vulnerability in the book. What does vulnerability have to do with weight loss and goal accomplishment in general?
Did you read our whole book, Mike?
I did.
You are awesome. You are awesome. Thank you. Well, vulnerability. Vulnerability is, I could go so many directions on this topic, because I think sometimes I feel like maybe I'm a little too vulnerable. But, you know, we all have these layers. We have these kind of protective mechanisms that save us from getting hurt, right? And for a lot of the people that we work with, it's they don't want to feel that shame anymore. They don't want to feel like they're not good enough. So right away along the journey, they kind of build these layers and these walls, and they've blocked so many people out of their life. They don't even know the truth anymore, because they haven't been willing to tell the truth for so many years. It's like when someone says, well, why are you fighting? You know, they talk about, I'm 500 pounds, but I, you know, eat this and I do everything right. Well, they know that they're not telling the truth. But what they also know is that that's them not telling the truth is protecting themselves. That's, they're kind of shielding, they're blocking that vulnerability, that ability to open up and be real and to be honest and to be open about everything that's really going on, because they want to protect themselves and protect how they look, protect how they feel, so they're not hurt again, because they've been hurt over and over and over. And I think as humans, we all experience hurt, and we tend to build those walls so we're not hurt again. But it's so amazing and so incredible. And this kind of circles around to my eating disorder as well. I'll just kind of use that as an example. That's something that I hid, like I said, because I was so ashamed. Like even Chris, I never, ever talked to him about my eating disorder. Never. I mean, from the moment I met him, I never told him what I had dealt with, until we started working with people and I saw how badly some of them needed to hear my experience, like how badly they needed that guidance in their life. So I decided for the first time in my life to open up and be vulnerable and to share with them everything I went through. And it took time, because vulnerability, it's not easy. Like, it's not easy to just open up and be ugly. We always say ugly is the new beautiful, and it really is, because when you can get those things off of your chest and you can show people who you really truly are. And actually, Chris said that to somebody on camera. He's like, ugly is the new beautiful. I'm like, Chris, you cannot tell a woman that. But it's true. Like, once we can be who we really are and we can show that vulnerable side, that ugly truth, it is so incredible how we not only are respected more by those people around us, like those things that we think are going to push people away actually end up bringing them closer. We give permission to every single person around us to then be vulnerable as well. And unless you're vulnerable, like until you're vulnerable, you cannot heal. You just can't. Like, if you are not in a place where you feel like you can unload the skeletons, like give the secrets up and kind of be who you are, tell them what you're really, really struggling with, you're never going to be able to heal. But it's like that vulnerability and unloading the weight is the very first step to any kind of healing. It really is. And Mike, I'm sure you've been there too. Like, when you could actually be real and be honest and authentic for the first time, I'm sure that was the time where you're like, oh my gosh, like I can actually say what I'm dealing with, and oddly, I feel better about myself. Like, I feel like there's hope for me now, you know?
And I'm more accepted.
Yes.
You know, it's when I and other people pretend like everything's okay, that everything's going perfectly, that people can't relate to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, like, even on this phone call, when you're like, how do you deal with stress? The thought that went through my mind, I'm like, well, I could give the steps to stress right now. But the honest truth is, I suck at dealing with stress. And I feel like people that hear your struggles, they, when you're vulnerable and people can see what you're dealing with, they're like, oh my gosh, like, I deal with the same thing. And so it kind of creates that bond, and it creates that clearing for you to start not only healing yourself, but helping others heal too. And I do think, gosh, so much to say. You just got to shut me up.
Keep going. Keep going.
I was going to say, circling around to social media, I do have a tendency to be pretty honest on social media, even when I'm struggling or having a bad day. But, and there are times where I question that. I'm like, gosh, am I saying too much? Am I like, yeah, showing people how imperfect I am? And is that like making them not like me more? But when I meet people in life and they've followed me or they've whatever, I think their number one thing they always say is they're inspired by my vulnerability, my openness. And I'm like, gosh, well, if being imperfect inspires other people, then I'm going to keep doing it. Because it really, I know for me, at least, when I see someone who I view as this person that has everything, when they open up and they share something that they're struggling with, or they're vulnerable, in other words, I actually feel a connection with them. Mm-hmm. And I feel better about myself, not because they're less of a person, but I'm like, gosh, okay, we're all human. We're all in this world together. We all struggle. Mm-hmm. I'm not alone.
Don't you almost feel like, ah, thank you for saying that. Now, you know, I'm just like you.
Yes, absolutely. And that's, maybe why I love to be open about things, because I never want anyone to think that I'm any better than them, because I'm not. Like, I probably have more struggles. I mean, I think maybe we all have the same struggles, relatively speaking, same amount, but I have just as many struggles as the person next to me. And I do love people to know that, because I feel like it only contributes positivity to their life. Mm-hmm. And something about making someone else's life better fulfills me to the max.
Absolutely. This is good shit. I got a couple more questions and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, you're good.
when you hear the word successful, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Gosh. You know, my dad. I mean, I could say like Bill Gates or someone like that because of, you know, financial success. But my dad, even though he's not here and he went through ups and downs and highs and lows, he had millions and then he had nothing and then he had millions again and then he had nothing and now he's not even here. I'm trying not to get a little too emotional here, but I think like the thing that makes him one of the most successful people I've ever seen in my life is the way that he balanced everything and the success that he created in his family. Money comes and goes, and like my dad's not here, and obviously like money is nothing. It means nothing. Financial success, it makes life comfortable while you're here, and it's nice to have it for that reason, but what's really important, what he did such an incredible job of, is creating such an incredible family bond between me and my brothers and my mom and him. That is, I mean, my entire family lives within like a 15-mile radius, and I never want to move further away because we love each other so much. We enjoy each other. That's the true meaning of life. And it's funny, when you ask me that question, it actually makes me kind of question my own life, because Chris and I place so much value and importance on helping people outside of our family. I have to say one of our biggest struggles is making sure we allot the proper amount of time to our family, because in the end, they're all we have, you know? Mm-hmm. They're what really matters to me. And I think sometimes we justify by saying, well, you know, all these people that we work with, they become family, and they really do. I think we have a pretty extended family because of how close our relationships are with people. But Yeah, family success, and really maybe even in those close friend bonds that become family, that's more important than anything. And my dad nailed it. Nailed it.
That is amazing. He sounds like a very powerful person.
He is. It's hard to say was, because you know, you hope his spirit's here somewhere.
Sure.
I believe it is.
My last question is, what do you want to make absurd in 20 years? And I'll give you a couple examples. 20 years ago, it was, you know, totally commonplace to see a, like a grocery store clerk smoking a cigarette, right?
Yeah.
And now today it's absurd. 20 years ago, it was, and shit, not even 20 years ago, 10 years ago, it was totally commonplace to see people throwing an entire like McDonald's bag outside of the window.
Yeah.
Now it's completely absurd. What do you want to make absurd in 20 years?
I want to make absurd in 20 years the percentage of our society that is obese. I really do, without a shadow of a doubt. This right now, the trend is going the opposite. I feel like Chris and I are fighting like this tidal wave, and so many other people that we're working with, and they really are. And it's, this is why Chris and I focus so much on families, health and families, because we feel like that's where the success is going to start. You have to get into the home. You walk into a school and see how many kids struggle these days. And it's not just because we want all of these skinny people running around. No, if you actually pull those kids aside and you talk to them, you really get to know them, you feel them, you watch what they experience, they are hurting, not just physically, but they're hurting because they're bullied, they don't feel good about themselves, and they have no idea what to do. And it's just, it's simply a lack of education. Without a shadow of a doubt, if families and kids and people in general were just educated about how simple change is to actually make, this world would be a different place. I know without a doubt, though, it would definitely save heartache on kids. And gosh, we've all been kids. It's not fun to be made fun of. It's not fun to feel like you're an outcast. And so many of these kids these days do. So to be able to make that change and to make that something that's totally absurd, like in 20 years, we're like, everyone, you know, it's not abnormal to walk into a school and have most of the kids actually be healthy. That would just be amazing. Think of how much more productive and how much brighter our future would be too, because those healthy, efficient, productive human beings are going to be the ones really ruling our world.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys are right on your way with this app. I think you'll reach at least a billion, hopefully all seven.
I hope so. I do. We're aiming for the stars and hope I'm sure, who knows? Aiming for the stars, but we'll be happy if we land on the moon. That's for sure.
Awesome. Where can people go to find you personally, as well as what you and Chris are up to?
You know, the best place right now, social media, everything is at Real Heidi Powell. So Instagram at Real Heidi Powell, Twitter, it's the same, at Real Heidi Powell, and then Facebook, same, facebook.com/Real Heidi Powell. And then, of course, my blog, HeidiPowell.net, where I give lots of free advice.
Awesome, Heidi. Thank you so much. This was so insightful and just a powerful talk. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I think I learned as much from you.
Nice.
Awesome. Hey, by the way, I got the book you sent us in the mail. I opened it today. Thank you, Mike.
It's a good one.
I can always count on you.
It's awesome. It's a good one.
You need to come visit.
I will soon. Y'all have a good night.
All right, thanks.
Bye.